You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
Coming up on Columbia Calling, with me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, 2,600 meters closer to the stars, the capital of Colombia. We're talking to Kevin Howlett of Columbia Politics and Mark Kennedy of the Bogota Post, and we're going to be doing a whole show all about the results of the Colombian presidential elections and what this means to the peace processes, what this means to the striking farmers, and what these results mean to the country as a whole. So we've got a whole political show said with, reported on by experts from Canada and experts from the UK, all about Colombian politics. Don't miss out.
The world is a beautiful place, so listen up. The Overseas Radio Network.
What does your dream job look like? Is it spending an hour or more every morning, every night, stuck in traffic? Is it staying up late to finish that report for the boss? No, didn't think so. So where are the opportunities for the entrepreneurs with a sense of adventure? Where are the businesses for sale that allow you to be your own boss on your own terms, wherever in the world you choose? OverseasVentures.com. Overseas Ventures is the first business listing directory of its kind. Our focus is to provide a personalized experience for those looking to invest in overseas opportunities and start living their dream of the Overseas Ventures lifestyle. With everything from tiki bars on the beach in Belize to boutique hotels in the warm, sunny Caribbean to online opportunities for those who want to live out of their suitcase and just travel the world. Overseas Ventures is the first website dedicated solely for the global entrepreneur in mind. Check us out now at OverseasVentures.com to dream, own, and live a new life abroad.
Ready to learn about a new life overseas? You're at the right place. This is the Overseas Radio Network.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's Columbia Calling with me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota. And we're going to do a long show this week. We've got an actual election special this week because we've just had the elections. It's all over, but it's been an intriguing situation here in Bogota and nationwide. So I've got two experts, two journalists, political experts, who've been on the show before, but also have interesting opinions to share. So I've got Mark Kennedy, who's the editor-in-chief of the Bogota Post newspaper, a new Anglo newspaper here. And we've got Kevin Howlett, who's been on the show a few times as well, is Columbia Politics, the director of ColumbiaPolitics.com. So, Santos wins. What are we going to say about it?
Well, no great surprise. I mean, we're on the show. I was on the show in March, I think, or April, just after the congressional election. I was talking about how 70% of the nation was against the re-election of Santos, according to all the polls, but that he was the favourite to win, which sounds like a sort of impossibility. But the fact of the matter was that it came down to Santos and the peace process, or Uribe and no to the peace process. Santos managed to create that argument, and because of that he won, effectively.
And largely with the help of the media, of creating that sort of dichotomy where it's a vote for literally war or peace. And so people were afraid of war. There's a lot of desplazados. I mean, they keep coming in to the major cities. So, I mean, why not vote against that? And I guess 5 percentage points of the voting, the voters came down and said, well, we want a peace process. We don't like Santos per se, but we want the killing to stop, pretty much.
So he engendered fear.
Yeah, he won through. I wrote an article saying that the president had created a situation which was a choice between fear and loathing, effectively, suggesting that Uribe represented hatred. Hatred because, I'm sure Mark will talk about this a bit later, he had a good quote on what sort of view Uribe has of the FARC and of Castro Chavismo, as he calls it, and fear that the peace process would break down. Santos, what he managed to do was he lost the first round of voting at the end of May, but Zuluaga won. Zuluaga's the Uribista candidate. He won by something like 500,000 votes and about 5% of the vote. And what Sanders managed to do was cobble together coalitions, not only the coalitions that, that Mark was talking about in terms of the media, which have always been on his side for reasons of finance, familial ties, and plenty other reasons as well. But he also managed to create a coalition of the left wing, which I think was one of the reasons that decided his victory. He managed to bring Clara Lopez, who was the Polo Democratic candidate. She won 2 million votes in the first round, and she came out in support of the peace process. Also, he managed to bring in Antanas Mockus, who ran against Santos in 2010, again on the promise of peace, and also the mayor of Bogota, Gustavo Petro, again on the peace idea. Santos, what he managed to do was change Bogota from... Bogota was with Zuluaga in the first round. After Sunday's vote, last Sunday's election, Santos managed to double or triple his vote in Bogota and was a clear winner in Bogota. What's happened is it's also left the country, I think, divided in two. If you look at the geographical, think of the American map after the elections. There you have the sort of outlying, the coastal bits, which are Democrats, and then the internal bits, which are almost invariably Republican. And you've kind of got a similar situation, except almost reverse here. So you've got the more left-wing or centrist, which have all the outlying, the coastal towns. So you've got Cauca, Bahía de Cauca, Chocó, all those sort of areas that go right round the Atlantic, on the coast, that are with Santos. And then in the internal, the Andes in the internal part, so you've got Risaralda, you've got Antioquia, you've got Caldas, you've got Tolima, which of course is where the FARC began.
Meta.
All of those are with Zuluaga or Uribe. The only exception, really, is you've got the is Bogota, effectively. Mm-hmm. So the country is kind of split in two, and I think that's reflected by the fact that 50% voted for Santos and 45% voted for Zuluaga.
And getting back to the sort of the fear factor there, I think the Zuluaga Uribe camp sensed that. Mm-hmm. And that's why they allowed that very public alliance with Marta
Lucia Ramirez.
Yes, to come together. And her conditions of lending her public support was that he would not immediately suspend the peace talks if elected president. And at that time, I thought he had it. I thought that was...
He had the momentum, didn't he?
I thought he had the checkmate move.
Yeah.
And up until, was it last Tuesday, where... suspiciously...
The timing of the ELN
announcement... That, Uribe said he would explore dialogues with the ELN and the FARC, which would pretty much end the guerrilla insurrection here in Colombia, and then they could focus on sort of drug traffickers and the rich mosaic of other,
other armed groups here. But it's curious, though, because... If you've got, you know, Marta Lucia Ramirez from the Conservative Party joining up, but not the whole Conservative Party moved over to Zuluaga, but it was interesting because her conditions were, you know, to stop the child recruitment and landmines, wasn't it?
Those are the key ones. Had to cease those activities,
you know, which are kind of difficult to maintain or even to keep in check. So it was always going to be up for debate whether the dialogues would continue. I mean. But I thought, you know, at that point, when it was Zuluaga and Ramirez, I thought, Santos is really, yeah, like you said, Mark, is really up against it right now.
Yeah.
If he can't pull in, you know, the support of the left, because Peña Loza had already, from the Green Alliance, said, I will not be, you know, publicly backing anyone. We could expect most of the Green Alliance to go to Santos, but equally, you know, without that public endorsement, it's a big deal.
Well, I think this was perhaps the most important victory for the left in Colombia's history. That sounds like a bold statement, but I can't think of. I mean, you know, the other left figures have either been, well, gotten rid of or whatever, or just didn't get anywhere. And the left has really struggled to make any real impact. But with Clara Lopez winning 2 million votes, with her joining the coalition, sort of at least to support peace, it looks like a major victory for them. They managed to double the votes. If you look at the Marcha Patriotica as well, which is Piedad Córdoba's outfit, they also came in line with Santos. So what Santos is doing is he called it a sort of
Coalition for Peace.
They call it the front. How would you translate it in English? I'm not quite sure. But the front, the large front or whatever it is for peace, the grand front or whatever you want to call it, which sounds rather Orwellian to me. combining these groups of moving from the extreme left to the institutional and centrist left, represented by Lopez and also perhaps Gustavo Petro. So I think this is an amazing victory, I think, for the left, and we'll see whether Santos brings in any ministerial positions to respond and reflect that victory.
Well, we'll come back to this point because, of course, we're touching on incredibly important political points here in Colombia. We're not going to be outspoken like we usually are. We're going to talk about it in a level-headed fashion. But this is Colombia Calling. We're going to take a short break. I'm Richard McComb. We'll be right back with Mark Kennedy and Kevin Howland.
OverseasRadio.com, broadcasting from Panama to Paris and beyond.
Attention investors, Nagel & Associates and the Overseas Radio Network are sponsoring a one-of-a-kind asset protection and global investment conference this August aboard the celebrity cruise ship, the Constellation. This 12-night cruise will feature the best of Northern European capitals, including Amsterdam, Stockholm, Berlin, Tallinn, Helsinki, Copenhagen, and the highlight of the cruise, St. Petersburg. You will experience the breathtaking scenery of Northern Europe while discovering cutting-edge developments in asset protection and global investment strategies. In this small group setting, you'll learn from renowned international experts and then get to spend quality time as fellow passengers really get to know them and letting them know you and how their expertise might be of great benefit to you and your future. Not only that, but our conference is headlined by Jack Wheeler, who the Washington Post refers to as the real-life Indiana Jones. Come and get to know Jack and his wife, Rebel, and enjoy some adventure stories on the high seas. Registration fees are $13.99 for a single and only $19.99 per couple. Sign up before May 30th, and you'll receive a $300 discount on your registration fees. Register now by calling 1-914-269-8848 or send an email to rachel@hemisphereslpublishing.com. We hope to see you aboard.
You've got questions about Colombia, and Escape Artist has answers. Is Colombia a good fit for me and my plans? How do I buy a house, find a job, find a doctor, start a business, invest in real estate? What should I know to better appreciate its history, its culture, its opportunities? What is it really like to be an expat in Colombia? You'll find your answers at colombia.escapeartist.com, your complete and trusted guide for living, working, playing, investing, and retiring in Colombia. That's colombia.escapeartist.com.
You're listening to the Overseas Radio Network, the exclusive online radio station for the expatriate community.
And we're back. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. I'm here with Mark Kennedy of the Bogota Post and Kevin Howlett of Colombia Politics. We're talking about the recent elections here in Colombia, which Santos won. Anyone with quite an interesting, let's say, tapestry of voters and coalitions. But I want to talk about a little bit of a term that's being used a lot in the press here, and it's called the Castro Chavismo, which of course is a reference to Fidel Castro or Raul Castro, whichever one you want, and Chavez, Hugo Chavez from Venezuela, deceased. But the whole idea of a politics based around their beliefs, their political creed here in Colombia, and of course that's how it was being painted. If Santos were to win, well, he has won, but that's how the Uribistas, the Uribe side, were painting it, that Colombia was going to become a Castro Chavismo sort of seat here on the northern end of South America. And people were coming out with the sort of statements like, there's going to be no more toilet paper or another, basically playing on the ignorance of an electorate, really, just playing on the emotions. I mean, but we're not going to see a Castro Chavismo here with Santos winning, are we, Mark?
He's an entirely business-friendly, investment-friendly president. I mean, he's from the bluest of the blue blood of Colombia, of the ruling class, if you like. He's been a foreign educated. He went to Harvard,
Kansas.
And
London School of Economics.
London School of Economics. Like, he couldn't be any more conservative in terms of his upbringing. So the fact that he would even, like, for him to go to the left, for him is like, you know, like putting in place taxes on big business, or putting in like protections for campesinos and the TLC. So I mean, like, he's not going to go any further to the left. I think that just represents the lack of a logical argument in the Uribista camp, and their inability to really sort of intellectualize the arguments against pursuing peace, and just sort of like into the run-up to the elections, just really play on people's emotions, play on their ignorances, and also play the well-played fear card, which Uribe does just expertly. And so to paint a picture of that we're going to be the next, that Colombia is going to be the next Venezuela, that there's going to be a sort of conflict, it's going to be sort of run out of Havana, it defies cynicism of just how much that people bought into that, that fear. And there is a real genuine fear of that, because, I mean, just look at Colombia's tragic history and how big the FARC were, how much clout they had, even up until the 90s. So, I mean, that was a very legitimate fear up until that point. So that's still very fresh in a lot of Colombians' minds, I think. And so the Chavista...
It's a non-event.
Yeah. It's a non-event in the post sort of violencia Colombia, if you like.
Kevin, I wanted to ask you as well about this. You were talking about the map of Colombia, it's basically a ring around Colombia, which is, let's say, Santista, or voted for Santos, depending on whoever they really cared to vote for, and then the center minus Bogota state, and of course all of the Eje Cafetero and the Paisa, traditional Paisa lands, are all Zuluaga Uribe. But do you think a lot of the, let's say, the farmer strikes, the agricultural strikes, had a lot to do with the way that those lands, like, let's say, Meta, Boyacá, Tolima, voted?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I've got some very good friends who are cafeteros. I was down with them last year through the 2-week strike. And Santos has, according to them, Santos has completely failed to uphold his promises to them. And the whole region, the whole cafetero region, which is Antioquia, which is Risaralda, which is Caldas, and then you have Boyacá, which is where the potato farmers come from, and Huila as well. All of those areas were on strike for a long time last year. And if you look at those Zuluaga, I should say. some people say Uribe was a real candidate.
Zuluaga,
yeah. He won sort of 60-65%. So quite a significant margin in those towns. So, I mean, those areas are more traditionally conservative, or at least the Antioquian side and Caldas and so on are anyway. So you would expect them to be Uribe, even perhaps independently of whether there had been strikes, even independently of whether the government had honoured its promises to the campesino. But it certainly helped, if you like, bring out the vote there.
And that's what I thought, you know, when we were talking about Marta Lucia's going with, teaming up with Zuluaga. And
who's more sort of urban. Has more of an urban electorate, whereas Uribe has always been quite rural, if you like. Obviously, he did win urban centres. But if you look at Santos, if you look at all the major urban centres, so Cali, for example, apart from Medellin, all the other, Barranquilla, he won with something like 85%. If you look at all those major urban centres, Santos has won. So you've got a kind of urban-rural divide, I think, in Colombia that's coming through. Again, that sounds similar to picture in the US to a certain extent.
But it's the age-old problem here, the urban and the rural. I mean, it's been going on forever. I mean, that's the whole let's say, the commencement of all the troubles here, really. But if you had, we think about, when I saw Zuluaga go down there immediately, and he did that campaign in Boyacá, and he, you know, going up and all the great photo ops of hugging the farmers and stuff and having the ruana, you know, the traditional poncho, he's got those departments. If he can mobilize enough voters from all those departments, you know, he was going to have a chance. But, well, I mean, Santos won, but, well, how did he secure all the votes from the coast?
Well, that's the age-old problem. The age-old question. The last time I was on the show, we were talking about the famous concept, the mermelada, which is the...
The marmalade.
The jam that's used, which effectively is... state money that's used in various different ways. Some accuse them of going directly towards buying votes. Uribe himself, certainly, if you look at Uribe's tweets in the last few days, he's totted up the level of vote increase in the Atlantic department, for example. Atlantic, which is where Barranquilla is, 85%, I think, in that state voted for Santos. People are... where does it come from? Who knows? But there's the party machinery, which is traditional liberal area, all along the coast there, Guajira, Atlantico, Bolívar, Super. Where you're from, exactly. All that's kind of traditional liberal. So there's a mixture of party votes, so getting the vote out, also with the votes, as they call it here, the voto amoral, which is the votes either linked directly to the machinery or actually bought votes. And there is a bit of both. In Bogota, you can't really say it was that. Bogota is more what they call the opinion vote. But there is definitely a party movement there, particularly on the coast.
Mm. Getting on that point, I saw, I think it was something that was posted by one of you gentlemen, showing that the increase of Santos's support versus the first round and the second round, and how it shot up. Well, that's a bit disingenuous to think that... I mean, it could be a lot of state. I'm sure there's a lot of money-related going on. But, I mean, that's just by virtue of the fact that there's only two candidates in the second round, so obviously you support one or the other. The other point is, has there ever been a clean election in Colombia? Mm-hmm. Has there ever been sin marmalada?
Sin marmalada.
Yeah, without the jam that sort of lubricates the machinery of voting, if you will. And something like there was 197 vote reports of... irregularities by a watchdog, MOE.
Yeah,
their name escapes me. But I mean, even that isn't enough. Wasn't enough.
Mm.
Like widespread vote buying, marmalada, wasn't enough to get the million or so, sort of just north of a million votes that Santos did receive, and such a wide margin.
Mm.
So I think, yeah, there was probably some dirty politics going on.
But
on both sides,
yeah.
But not nearly enough for him to steal the election.
Yeah,
I think it's a mixture of. I think most people would say it's a mixture of both things. So partly the opinion vote, which comes probably from the left, the people that didn't want to return to Uribe, that were voting for peace, and also the party machinery, which again, the machinery, as I say, is a mixture of corruption and a mixture of genuine votes associated along. I'm a member of the Liberal Party. Right. I'm going to go and vote for the Liberals. Mm. So it's not as easy as Uribe would like to point it out, that it was just corruption.
I mean,
equally, there aren't many people who would suggest that there wasn't any corruption. But it's not enough to win the elections alone.
I would argue that the second round presidential election was a lot cleaner than the first one.
And the congressional.
And the congressional elections, which had Uribe sort of leading up until like 20 minutes left in the count, and then all of a sudden, like the National Unity Coalition just shot up.
Yeah, the National Coalition of Social Unity. Some very strange things. But Uribe, he's on his soapbox at the moment saying that, you know, vote buying, etc. But the Organization of American States said, you know, nothing.
But then again, they say there's no such thing as corruption in Venezuela. So I'm not sure I take that organization too seriously.
Alright, well, we'll wind down this section on that note. We'll be right back after a short break. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard Nicole. Please don't go away.
Pack your bags and explore the world with us. You're listening to the Overseas Radio Network.
Tired of paying for traditional advertising? Sick of pouring money into SEO and questionable marketing firms? Looking to reach a new audience? We know you want to grow your business and directly engage your customers and clientele. Podcasting is the way to go, and Podfly has your solution. Whether you're a blogger, writer, business owner, entrepreneur, or service provider, Podfly makes it easy for anyone to have a professionally produced and distributed podcast. No radio experience or technical ability? No problem. In 3 easy steps, you'll be on your way to having a professional-sounding podcast and an exciting new platform to promote your business. Podfly's top-class support team guides you through the process to make podcasting easy, fun, and most important, have you sound your best. Get started today at podfly.net and let's get your message truly heard. Podfly.net, passion for great-sounding podcasts.
Are you looking to invest, live, or retire overseas? Before you pack your bags, you need to log on to NagelLaw.com. It's the only stop you need to make for global business, asset protection, estate planning, overseas residency, and citizenship needs. Our experts have experience working in 41 countries around the world. Starting a business abroad can be overwhelming without expert help. We assist clients with foreign trust, foundations, corporations, LLCs, IBCs, and property acquisition. Need help with IRA assets abroad, capital formation, foreign securities issues, banking, brokerage, or finance needs? NagelLaw.com. We ensure compliance with U.S. tax and regulatory laws. We engineer global structures to help our clients achieve their personal business objectives. Get started today. To find out about our introductory personal asset protection plan, visit us online, NagelLaw.com. We represent capital overseas.
Okay, you're not stupid. You see the handwriting on the wall. You are thinking about joining the millions of Americans who have already left the country. But where do you go? You don't want to make the mistake of jumping from the frying pan into the fire. You need accurate info to make one of the most important decisions of your life. You need EscapeTheUSAnow.com. You don't want to have regrets because your expat country collapsed due to crime, conflict, disease, famine, natural disaster, scarcity, war, or a government gone bad. Only at EscapeTheUSAnow.com will you discover the handful of countries that offer true freedoms and unbelievable opportunities that most people could only dream of. EscapeTheUSAnow.com is the information you cannot afford not to have. Information that took over 30 years to research, costing hundreds of thousands of dollars, with more than a quarter of a million miles traveled. For less than $2.50 per month, you can have what may be the most life-saving information you have ever obtained. EscapeTheUSAnow.com, so you don't jump from the frying pan into the fire.
You're tuned in to OverseasRadio.com, the station to help you reach your dream destination.
And we're back. This is Colombia Calling. As you will have guessed, we're talking about politics here in Colombia in the wake of the presidential elections, which went to a second round. President Santos will be sworn in again on August the 7th. He'll be the second president, really, to have a double tenure like this. Now, I wanted to say something very quickly because we're going to go on to the peace processes, plural. We're going to go on to that in a minute. But I wanted to say something. All of the reports coming out in the press at the moment are that Santos wants to push through, prohibit being able to run for two terms and make the presidential term 6 years. Is that right? I mean, is anyone...
Yeah, you heard it here first. I talked about it, I think, end of last year or April. I can't remember which show it was. But Santos was suggesting that he might do this a while ago. What he doesn't like the figure of... They call it the figure of re-election, basically because... The way that the power's structured here, the president has so much power. We talked about how the media is very much on side as well. So, and with the state coffers and the potential corruption, that leads to, there's a real imbalance in the power. So he wants to get rid of the idea of re-election, go back to what the 1991 constitution said, which is just one term, but amplify that term to 6 years. From my personal point of view, it sounds like a strange message. The first thing you do as an act of a new president is to focus not on the reform of healthcare, not on the reform of education, not on the reform of justice, but instead on political reform, something that doesn't really affect the lives of many Colombians. So he would like to extend it to 6 years. I talked about how the figure of Vargas Lleras, who was the vice president running mate of Santos, it will be one of the most important figures in the future. Why? Because he is going to become a prime minister rather than the vice president. The previous vice president under Santos didn't really do very much and fell out with Santos. This one will have a lot of power, I think, in terms of legislation, and will be in 2018 the candidate. So he will be effectively the first person running on the idea of an extended six-year term. Another possibility is that Santos just runs for 2 years, signs the peace agreement, and in 2016 says, that's it, I've had enough. And we called to election in 2016 because Santos didn't really want, the rumours were that Santos didn't really want to run this time anyway, and really only did so because of the peace agreement. So we either have 2016, the first 6 year presidency, or 2018, the first year six year presidency, and I think that would be Vargas Lleras and I think Gustavo Petro.
Huh, very interesting.
I'm actually just learning about this now. But I find it very interesting because I can't think of any other country where a leader can't run again. And I think a problem with that would be that you essentially elect a dictator for 6 years, someone who does not have to face the electorate ever again.
Correct.
And doesn't really have to really be accountable because he's out anyway. If he's out on a high tide, he's out on a low tide, he's still out. He can't run again. So I think that that would be interesting. And I think, like you suggested, it would create a sort of set of dynasties.
Yeah.
It's a return, isn't it?
Yeah,
to the idea. I mean, you're the national front where you have you go for 4 years and then we'll go for 4 years. You go for 4 years and then we'll go for 4 years. Yeah, from my point of view, although the Express is very democratic because of this problem of the separation of powers, it's very anti-democratic in principle. How can the whole point of democracy is that you should be able to vote for someone who's good and vote to kick out someone who's bad.
Right.
And you won't have this ability. The voters won't have this ability now. It takes the sovereignty, that decision that away from the people and puts it in the hands of the politicians, which I think is a very retrograde step.
Unless the reforms were set to include something along the lines of making it easier for a recall referendum, like what we almost saw for Gustavo Petro, if that came into force so that these next sort of president, arrogant dictator X, whoever it might be in the future, should this go through, that he would have to face the electorate at some point, maybe after a 2-year term. I don't see that happening, though, not being written into the current law. But I think Kevin can articulate that point better because I think he's breaking the story, at least to the Bogota Post. He's breaking it.
To the Bogota Post and on Columbia Calling. So I don't know if I could manage a president or a prime minister for 6 years,
well, 6 years
without
of a
voting.
6 years of a great president is not nearly long enough, but 6 years of a bad president is terrible. And the presidents that Colombia have had, it's not a great precedent, is it?
Not. And so, you're possibly saying that what we're going to have is a Blairite handover to Brown. I mean, a Santos to Vargas Lleras.
I think President Santos would love to be called Tony Blair, as he's a great friend of his and likes to extol the virtues of the Third Way. But yeah, effectively like that. I mean, I'm sure that was the deal that was cooked up. We talked about this deal that was potentially cooked up between Vargas Lleras was about to run. Yeah. Vargas Lleras could have beaten Santos if he had run. But he said, well, hang on, I'll stick with my boss. So it's impossible in a country like Colombia, impossible in many countries, really, to conceive that a politician would do such an honourable act without having something in return. So I suspect he'll be... I suspect in 2016 or 2018, he'll have the full endorsement of President Santos. And it'll be very difficult to beat.
Such a statement. Yeah, we're not expecting that. But I want to say, just as we're on the Third Way, you did see the news, there will be a Third Way convention on the 1st of July in Cartagena with Teflon, Bill Clinton, Tony Blair, and others in Cartagena.
I'm a great fan of the Third Way, so I look forward to that. I'm not sure Santos really represents the Third Way. He loves to pretend he does, but I'm sure we'll all be there, won't we, Richard?
I was actually contracted by a newspaper in the UK on the right to investigate President Clinton in Cartagena. I did unearth some things, but decided against.
I bet.
I decided against publishing. They paid me for it anyway. But
it's a fun place. There's lots of things to do.
Yeah, well, he's great friends at the Santo Domingo, and he and Andres Pastrana get up to no good. So that's all we're going to say. No, let's get on to the peace time. Dialogues before we swing boats anywhere, but the peace dialogues. Now, listen, they've come to some sort of an agreement on, let's say, or they have to address the rights of the victims and who are the victims in Colombia. I mean, that's number 5 on this 5-point agenda. It's a massive. It's probably the thorniest section of the peace dialogues. The election has been won. Santos is going to continue, but how do we see now these? Is he in a strong position to keep negotiating? What do we see about the peace dialogues?
Well, I think personally that it might not even go through. It might drag on for years and years. There's no deadline, and the FARC leadership have said that they will not spend one day in prison. So how do you have a peace without impunity when the leaders, you know, who have committed the most horrific crimes, arguably, of the sort of 50-odd years of violence, who won't spend one day in prison, even with this sort of demobilization of the of the paramilitaries, you had many of the leadership spending years in prison and are indeed still in prison. So how do you get to that point? How do you get a peace accord when the FARC have staunchly said, we will not spend one day in prison, which I think is going to be very problematic. I don't think it will necessarily lead to a collapse in the peace process, but I think it will sort of drag on, possibly until like Santos's last year and even beyond. And this might be, the next election in 4 years might again be a decision between war and peace, because the right is will definitely capitalize. And the longer it drags out, the Uribista camp and the sort of Colombian rights will definitely capitalize on that.
I wanted to mention that. I see. I think you've got really, really valid points. I get the feeling that those who they decide to agree upon having, let's say, performed crimes against humanity will get, you know, jail time. But those won't be the head ones, because they'll say they didn't know. You know, that's what always happens. Oh, we weren't aware of what the rank and file were doing out there in the
jungle.
Wasn't
in my name, Gov.
Yeah. But the other thing is, I get the feeling that Santos wants to try and push this through by December.
Well, you've got to remember that the key thing is it has to be a referendum, and therefore, and you have to have 25% of the electorate have to turn out for that for it to be a quorum or whatever you call it, for it to stand. So if you have a referendum independently of any other elections, it's very difficult to see that 25% of people would turn out, because those that are against it would stay at home. So what do you do? You tie it to the next elections, and those elections are the municipal elections, which are October next year. Okay. So there's a view that's coming out that's saying, well, you have to have the peace agreement signed well in advance of that and then take it to referendum in October, whether or not that will happen because of the dynamics that Mark was talking about. If you think the president now has been elected on this promise of peace process, the FARC guerrillas know that very well, and their negotiation position has changed immensely. They are now incredibly powerful as actors and could theoretically sit on their hands and say, well, you know, we aren't going to accept any of these demands that you're making, Mr. President, because we know that if you don't deliver this peace process, then your mandate is absolutely shot. The last five elections have been decided by the FARC. Andrés Pastrana wanted to go into the peace process. Then you had Uribe again, Santos, and Santos again. So the fact that the FARC are there and deciding these elections, there's no indication that, again, as Mark's saying, in 4 years' time, the FARC won't again be deciding these elections. It's difficult to see how it would go. The hope is that they are sufficiently far advanced, and the FARC have got the message that people are saying, look, your time is up. This is what Santos was saying. Your time is up. People have spoken. We want peace. But the FARC's history suggests that we shouldn't be too optimistic that they will receive that message.
Go for it, Mark.
I was just going to say that short of the transitional justice, which would be necessary to get to the sort of 0.5 and the peace accord, I think the only thing you might be able to sell to the public in the next election would be exile. I think that would be the sort of next best option if the leadership will not spend one day in prison. Maybe they just never come back to Colombia, at least officially, and they live out their days quite comfortably, in fact.
On a yacht in Cuba.
No, yeah, exactly.
Canada or Sweden, that's where they take them.
Yeah, well, yes, hopefully not Canada.
You've got a few, up there.
Yeah, we do. We got a few of
the EPL, the M19.
The FLQ in Quebec.
Yeah.
But I think that if... because that is the whole point. That was the whole point of Zulu Uribe, I like to say, Zulu Uribe camp, is that peace at what cost? Peace at sort of mass murderers, getting away with it, and sort of coming back and living out a quiet life, a life indeed in politics.
Well, one thing is certain. I was just going to say one thing is pretty much certain is that they will be offered some political representation in Congress. And there's a lot of precedent for that, you know, in Northern Ireland and others. So I don't think that people would be. I think people could be convinced on that. But the point is, it needs to go to referendum, and Santos starts to need to sell the reason, the advantages of this peace process. And hopefully, it will be signed soon, and by October they'll referendum it.
Okay, so we're going to come back to this point about the peace processes, the peace dialogues with the FARC, and of course then we have to address the one with the ELN. So we'll be back in just after a short break. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. Please don't go away.
Your expatriation destination. This is OverseasRadio.com.
Worried about rising taxes, costly insurance, out-of-control health care, economic decline, staggering debt, mortgages, and retirement? It doesn't have to be this way. Escape to Ecuador, one of the most beautiful countries on the planet, and at EcuadorAtYourService.com, be your guide. Ecuador has been named the number one retirement destination in the world 3 times in a row. So if you're searching for beaches, jungles, farmland, cities, affordable health care, and a richer lifestyle at half the cost, contact EcuadorAtYourService.com.
Searching for freedom? The sustainable community in Chile is found at FreedomOrchard.com. Quiet, peaceful, and pristine are some of Freedom Orchard's outstanding features. Freedom Orchard offers recreational activities, organic farming, and self-sufficiency for water and electricity. Well-known Chile expert, free market economist, and radio host of Red Hot Chile, Dr. John Coben, is heading a team of developers, organic farmers, and seasoned professionals to make Freedom Orchard a reality. FreedomOrchard.com, for when you're serious about your freedom.
Sit back and relax. You are tuned into the Overseas Radio Network.
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. We're here with Mark Kennedy of the Bogota Post and Kevin Howlett of Columbia Politics. We've been talking politics in Colombia, and we've been talking most recently the peace dialogues that have been ongoing since November 2012 between the government, the government's negotiating team in Havana, Cuba, and the FARC, so the Fuerzas Armadas Revolucionarias de Colombia, the FARC guerrillas who have been waged against the state since time immemorial, really, was what we can think of. The 1958 onwards, really, pretty much. I think they formed in 64, but yeah, generally speaking, 58, everything's there. So we've been talking about the problems that are going to be encountered by President Santos in this next mandate, in this next few months, really. As you're talking about there needs to be a quorum. But let's move on from the FARC. I mean, we know they're there, they're sitting. I mean, those guys at the Secretariat, they're happy in Cuba. That's going to roll on for a little bit. Now, what about the smaller guerrilla group, the ELN, or the Ejército de Liberación Nacional, so the National Liberation Army? You've got around, depending on who you read, around 3,000 combatants out there. They are strategically positioned. People write them off, but they are so strategically positioned around the country, Arauca and in the south of Bolivar, in the mining areas. You know, they have positions in parts that are really designed to hit the economic prowess of Colombia and international investment, the Canadian mining groups, and so on. I mean, okay, so the exploratory talks have taken place in Ecuador and in Brazil. And so we're waiting for what's going to come out now. Who's going to be the guarantor? Where they're going to take place? Do we see these talks taking the same model as those of the FARC, or are they going to be different? Now, how do you feel, you guys?
I think they will follow a very similar model. There's the ELN and the FARC effectively, for all intents and purposes, joined forces last year. They accepted that they would be a kind of a one unit in to a certain extent. So I suspect that the lessons learned in Havana will be applied wherever the new I think it's going to be Ecuador, isn't it, that they're talking about. So wherever they decide to hold the talks, I suspect they will follow a very similar model. Hopefully it can be accelerated, having learned and offer effectively the ELN similar things that have been offered to the FARC. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, people do write the ELN off. They suggest it's a smaller, less important guerrilla group, but where they are positioned means they are an important actor to be neutralised, if you want to put it that way. The point about Colombia is that, you know, if we want to talk about post-conflict and that situation, there are so many actors that cause violence in the country that even if you get past ELN, even if you get past the FARC, you've still got other actors. But it's great. It is great news that the ELN have entered into these talks, and I suspect it will be a quicker process, mm-hmm. at least we hope so, than it has been with the FARC.
Right, and they, other than sort of kidnapping, their main sort of drive is infrastructure attacks. Mm-hmm. And something like some stock market, I think the oil actors, the oil companies here, after the election, after Santos was reelected, their stock values just skyrocketed, like something like 5-10% in some cases. And so they're expecting Santos to deliver on his promise for peace generally, at least with the guerrilla groups. Mm-hmm. And that will at least bring down, maybe not eliminate, infrastructure attacks, which makes Colombia a lot better investment. Mm-hmm. It makes them a lot more attractive when you have like the other structural problems of the greatest sort of exporter, Venezuela, which is a complete mess and just being sort of a capital flight, sort of president's flight, flight of head offices from Caracas. And if you can stop or drastically reduce infrastructure attacks, which is the main driver of the ELN, then you will have a huge investment boom. Because what you had prior to the re-election is you had, in 2013, saw the most infrastructure attacks, acts of sabotage, bombings of pipelines ever. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, investment, it continues to climb in the capital markets and in the sort of GDP markets here. Something like the economy grew 4.6%. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, the economy continues to grow, but so too do attacks on infrastructure. Now, if you want to sort of accelerate Colombia as a marketable package to big business and you want to sort of bring in more investment, you know, speed through the process with the ELN, you know, get the reforms they want, like get some sort of social responsibility for these companies that act in very dirty ways and very intimidating ways to a lot of small communities. So to get some of those sort of structural checks and balances in place, and Colombia can be a shining example, I think, in Latin America.
I mean, you're referring principally to, of course, the Caño Limón Corvenas pipeline, which runs all the way along the border with Venezuela and then up to the Caribbean coast. The huge pipeline that's been bombed however many times. And, of course, because of the difficulties of the geography, getting people up there. And then, of course, the environmental impacts of not even talking about the extraction of the oil, or the environmental impacts of securing these pipelines once again. And then, of course, when you go where last year was, or the year before, when Norosi and Bolivar, where they kidnapped the Canadian, Jernok Wobert, in fact, the guy responsible for kidnapping, you know, from this engineer from Geo Explorer, was captured the other day in the town of Norosi because he set up an antenna on his roof to watch the Colombia game. And so that's you know, that's why when you're watching any football games, they always have the guerrilla desmovilizate, demobilize guerrilla. If there's one thing that unites, it's the football. But anyway, just that's a side anecdote to you there. But it's true, exactly. If at the very least things are signed on paper, you know, the stocks are going to climb again. And Santos is very pro-international business. Mm-hmm. We think it'll be faster. I think it'll be more open because the ELN have asked for it to be open. They've said the other day as well that they weren't behind the whole secrecy of the exploratory talks. So it'll be interesting to see how these two talks differ. And they will be played off against one another, do you think? I mean, you know.
Well, I think so. I mean, the key point is the openness of it, because the peace talks in Havana have come under a lot of criticism because we don't really know what's happening, and we receive these missives informing us that X, Y, and Z has been agreed to without actually any detail on that. And this has been part of the problem and the criticism of Santos, that he ought to have a great story around the peace process, but he hasn't done the job of telling us what actually is happening and what this means for Colombia and the advantages and so on and so forth. So it's really perhaps an opportunity for the talks with the ELN to kind of go back and start that process and build up towards this referendum. Because if people are going to vote for the reduced prison sentences or no prison sentences or exile or whatever they choose, then they have to be convinced. The arguments have to be made. At the end of the day, the Colombian people, the Colombians themselves are very sceptical of a lot of the aspects of the peace talks. So hopefully the ELN talks will allow this greater discussion and greater debate. At least we'll know what's happening then.
But part of the secrecy around the FARC talks was to turn their back completely on the whole sort of Pastrana model, where everyone was out there. I mean, there was more than 200 NGOs and negotiators and out there drinking with the guerrillas in San Vicente de Caiwan. But now it's gone too far. We need to be informed, wouldn't you say? The people need to know.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I remember we didn't get huge amounts of information of the Northern Ireland peace talks, but we were very much, Tony Blair did a very good job of explaining what was happening at various stages. And I think that allowed it to go through very relatively smoothly. I mean, these things never go through entirely smoothly. But yeah, the secrecy doesn't help. It allows, of course, as well, opponents to come up with outrageous claims about Castro Chavismo and so on and so forth.
That he's in bed with the FARC and being run by them.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, Uribe's argument was effectively that Santos is handing over the country to the FARC. Mm-hmm. Very difficult to make that case if you know what's actually happening and being negotiated on.
He sort of like downplays his own role in diminishing the FARC militarily over 8 years. So, I mean, with the ALN, I think the parameters will be much narrower. Mm-hmm. The history of violence isn't there so much. I mean, they haven't bombed civilian targets like the FARC. They're less of a terrorist group than the FARC, arguably. They're more tactical. Their main focus is on the injustices caused by business coming in and getting carte blanche on how they operate here. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, the foundation of their arguments are very valid and should be addressed. And I don't see why that can't be addressed and still make Colombia an attractive place to invest, to set up oil installations, minings. There's no reason why you can't do big business and have a sort of just model, have mm-hmm. a safety net, have environmental checks. There's no reason why you can't do both. So I think the parameters would be a lot narrower. And I think you'd be able to get a peace deal with the ALN a lot faster than the FARC because you don't have all that baggage. You don't have as much baggage of violence as you do with the ALN as opposed to the FARC.
And of course, there's the impetus to get them done at the same time so one group doesn't get absorbed into the other, of course.
Exactly. I mean, if the FARC give up and then the ALN say, well, hang on, you know, all you chaps can come and join us.
Yeah.
I mean,
suddenly go from 3,000 to 8,000 overnight, you know.
Yeah, and there will be splinter groups anyway, even when this thing is signed and agreed on, and as you had in Northern Ireland, you have the Real IRA and others. So there's not going to be a complete destructuring, if you like, of the entire guerrilla network. There will always be these actors, as there has been with the paramilitaries.
And many of them are making billions of dollars in drug trafficking. You think these people are going to like give up their billion-dollar like meal tickets just because they take off the sort of the military uniform and switch it for plain clothing,
this is an agreement to end the conflict rather than actually to establish the peace and the drug traffic. So it's when they say this is peace is going to arrive as soon as you sign this peace accord. I think that's hyperbolic in. It's a process on every level. It's a process, and it needs to happen, and it's very welcome. But we shouldn't kid ourselves that it will mean that there won't be any violence thereafter.
And there's a precedent there. I mean, with the demobilization of the AUC and other paramilitary groups, what you had is the creation in the sort of evolving into criminal bands and Los Uruguayos grew out of like splinter groups post. Paramilitary.
And so, harder to deal with.
Right.
The smaller chain of command that maybe don't want to be addressed by the.
No ideology to follow. Mm. So, like a cartel.
It's a tough one, and of course, if you have a demobilization, a mass demobilization, then you have also mass unemployment. He says you've got a huge element of an unemployed labor force.
You do. Just returning from the elections, actually, one of the ELNs. Areas, Norte de Santander, was one of the key sort of areas where the vote for Santos increased.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. It's interesting, and a lot of people said that maybe it's the people that are most affected by the war that said, well, actually, we'll give peace a chance. Or maybe as well, there were some suggestions that the FARC and the ELN were encouraging people to vote for Santos. Should we say that? So I think, again, it's a mixture of both things.
So I respond quickly to some of the Uribistas out there who have written furious posts on their Facebook pages and whatever, saying, you know, the using peace as a political motivator for thing is a disgusting matter. But as you said, I just want to draw back. Five elections have been based around the point of peace. It's just, I guess there was no other president standing out there with peace written on his hand and with a dove as his emblem. You know, I mean, it was pretty clear what was going on. But it was like, five elections have been based around peace. Or, you know, whatever, you know, if you want to contrive it some way. But equally, you know, that I don't find that being an argument. So we're going to finish up. We've got 1 minute left. I want to place this question to both of you, so short answers. What's Uribe going to do now?
He will be, well, he's elected senator, so he'll be the head of the opposition in the legislature and will make it incredibly difficult for Sanders to pass any law. He'll bring together a coalition of some of the Conservatives, and his own group has 20 senators, around 20 senators, so he will be incredibly strong as an opposition politician.
Mark?
I agree. I mean, there's not much else he can do but other than sort of try and put up roadblocks and just make Santos's and his coalition's life just a headache, give him heartburn, if you will, and sort of just try to rally his own base for the next election for whoever his handpicked candidate might be. And
it's probably a good thing,
yeah.
You know, that you have opposition.
You need it. You need opposition, but maybe a healthy opposition and not one so prone to making grandiose statements, sort of hyperbolic statements like, hey, you're handing over the country and the government to the FARC, to the terrorists. So,
well, he has 50%, around 45%, sorry, of the electorate. So he is going to be a key opposition politician with Zuluaga, with Marta Lucía Ramírez. 2008, Marta Lucía Ramírez, Gustavo Petro, and Vargas Lleras. Those are my picks.
So he's not going anywhere.
Okay, so that's very interesting.
Correct.
Well, thank you to you both. That's Kevin Howlett of Columbia Politics. So look up the website. It's columbia-politics.com. And Mark Kennedy of the Bogota Post. That's bogotapost.com.
The bogotapost.com. Our website will be up and running in the coming days and weeks.
Perfect. Thank you very much. This has been Columbia Calling. I've been Richard McCall. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Tune back in next week.
Live call-in shows and hosts from your favorite countries. This is the Overseas Radio Network.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing Board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.